listening to Zentertainment Talk Radio on the web at www.zentertainment.org. My name is Joe Davidson, and my guest today is Rick Hansen. He's a neuropsychologist and the author of this great little book called Just One Thing. It's a short book. It's an easy read. Each chapter is about 2 to 3 pages, and it's packed with exercises you can do to retrain your brain. They're just simple things. But as we all know, it's the small things that you do over time that count, that lead to bigger results. So I'm excited to share this with you, and I'm going to share a conversation that we had a few days ago. This is pre-recorded, and this is Rick Hansen. Let's talk a little bit about the brain. I read a lot of articles on your website, and all of you listening, you can check out rickhansen.net, and that's spelled R-I-C-K-H-A-N-S-O-N. .net. So, Rick, what are some facts about the brain that incline the mind to joy?
Fact number one is that as the brain changes, the mind changes. In other words, as different things happen inside the brain, it makes us feel different ways, for better or worse. So if bad things happen in the brain, we'll feel bad. If good things happen in the brain, we'll feel good. All right. Second fact, as the mind changes, the brain changes. In other words, as we think about different things, as we feel different ways, as we move attention around, that actually changes the brain, including in lasting ways. There's a famous saying in neuroscience that neurons that fire together wire together. The brain is continually changing its structure. The only question is, are you getting the changes you want? Right? Mm-hmm. So then takes us to the third fact, which is, you can use your mind. You can deliberately do certain kinds of mental activities. You can take in the good. You can have compassion for yourself. You can see the being behind the eyes in another person. You can be grateful, various practices related to my book, Just One Thing. And as you do that, you will literally be building up neural tissues, like building a muscle inside different parts of your brain. And then the fourth fact is, unfortunately, the brain is biased to negative experiences. It helped our ancestors survive. If you think about it, in the wild, you've got to go get those carrots and avoid those sticks. But here's the difference. If you fail to get a carrot today, you'll have a chance at one tomorrow. But if you fail to avoid a stick today, whap, no more carrots forever. And there are lots of ways this negativity bias shows up. One is in relationships. Research shows that good, strong relationships need at least a 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative experiences. In effect, one negative interaction is as powerful as 5 positive ones. You know how it is, right? 20 things happen a day with somebody.
Yeah.
What's the one you think about as you're falling asleep? That weird vibe you got, or that funny little argument, or you felt let down or misunderstood, right?
Yeah.
So that's a fact. And then, but that, on the other hand, goes to the point that if you, for example, deliberately take in positive experiences, that's the sixth fact, you really can change your brain for the better gradually over time. And then the seventh fact is that if you do this consistently, if you get on your own side, which is so important, especially people dealing with chronic health problems or psychological issues or tough life circumstances, you know, they've been laid off or they're on the bubble or their pension fund is going away or their partner's sick or they've got an aging parent, whatever it is, that if you get on your own side, you really can make good changes for yourself that will indeed accumulate over time.
So with this, the brain bias is so fascinating to me, and it's true. I've talked about that in other episodes in this topic, but just like you remember a bad review, in spite of you can have, you know, 50 good ones, and it's the one bad one that kind of sticks with you a little bit or bugs you, you know? So do you think that what are some things that you share in your book or some things that maybe have worked in your life, I'll ask you that, to help you to change that bias?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you two things, and they're both personal. The first is that in addition to just taking in everyday positive experiences, you can especially go after the positive experiences that are your personal vitamin C. In other words, if you have scurvy, you need vitamin C. If you're anemic, you need iron, right? Different people need different things. So, for example, if a person is working with anxiety, what they need, their vitamin C, are going to be experiences of feeling protected, feeling strong, and feeling safe. On the other hand, if your issue, as it was for me, is more feeling not seen by others, not included, not cared about, not valued, well, what you need to do is take in experiences of feeling cared about or feeling appreciated or feeling cherished and loved, right? So, and then what you can do, and this is the practice in the book called Fill the Hole in Your Heart, you can connect these personal vitamin C experiences for you based on real things. Either they're happening in the flow of everyday life, or you can look for the facts that reasonably would call up these positive experiences for, you know, a dozen seconds in a row. That's all I'm talking about here.
So you're you think of that situation, say that somebody was feeling anxious or whatever, and you say, are you talking about recalling feelings of being protected and safe?
Any which way. So let's say you're anxious. One way to do it is you're just going through life, and you have this sense of being kind of cozy. You know, you got home, you closed the door, you put the bolt on, you know, you're no longer at work, you don't have to deal with anything, and you start feeling a little safer, you start feeling more protected, you know, more like you've come to a place of refuge. That's actually another practice in the book, Find Refuge. But there you are, you're having the experience. What most people do, though, is that experience just washes through their mind, and it washes through the brain like water through a sieve. What you have to do to stick it into your brain is to stay with it for one or two dozen seconds in a row. That's what transfers it into long-term storage. But unfortunately, negative experiences transfer immediately. They have fast-track, dedicated memory systems. That's why it's really important to deliberately stay with positive experiences one or two dozen seconds in a row, half a dozen times a day, right? So you're either there because you just are in the middle of a positive experience naturally, or because you are deliberately thinking of things or recognizing things that are good facts, that are the basis for that experience. Like, for example, there you are sitting in your living room. You could, again, take a minute, look around the room, notice how strong and thick the walls are, look at the lock on the door, think of resources in yourself and or in your life, your credit cards, your strength of will, the friends you have that naturally are good facts that would naturally prompt a sense of being protected, or perhaps bring up a time in your life, just consciously kind of recall the feeling, not the idea, the feeling in the body of a time in your life when you felt strong. Maybe it was when you were doing something physical, you know, like the last repetition of weight in the gym, or you were really sticking up for somebody else or sticking up for yourself, or just enduring a really crummy situation. That's strength, too. Well, by calling up that sense of strength, that's an opportunity to actually, now that you've activated it, you can install it inside your brain, as it were, by just staying with it. And I talk about some of the details of how to do that. So either way, you're having a positive experience. That's the raw material of building up good things inside ourselves and also healing old pain or balancing things like anxiety. So that's an example of filling the hole in your heart. And I did that myself, you know, thousands of times. Starting in my early 20s, I'm in my 60th year, I'm 59, so I'm talking about 30 years now. 30 years ago probably, roughly, I started deliberately looking for positive experiences, typically mild, everyday positive experiences of feeling included, seen, loved, appreciated, you know, part of the group and so forth, which healed my own experiences of isolation and being an outsider. I was extremely young going through school, so I felt like an outsider a lot, and there were other things as well that, you know, produced this experience in me, this hole in my own heart, right? But, you know, even though that hole in the heart felt really big to me, you know, like the construction site for a skyscraper, a few bricks a day, day after day after day, and then year after year, you know, really filled that hole in my heart. As I say in Tibet, if you take care of the minutes, the years will take care of themselves.
That's so inspiring to me. And what I'm hearing, it's really the negative things kind of come in, and without our conscious attention almost, they come in and they can take over. And it takes conscious attention to really focus on the positive to change, I guess in a way, rewire the brain, right? By focusing on the positive experiences and consciously really focusing on them. And then you make the changes by doing that.
Yeah, no, that's one way. It's not the only way, of course, to heal or to deal with things. But I mean, to me, it's really underestimated.
Yeah, you know, I think it is what you're talking about.
The power
about
of positive experiences. And I'm going to be really clear here. By positive, I don't always mean pleasant. Uh-huh. In other words, usually a positive experience, one that helps you, is pleasant. But sometimes, for example, we have to take in something that might be a kind of poignant disenchantment with a partner, where or a job, or a career path, or a apartment rental, whatever. We realize, you know, this dog will never hunt. there's no cheese down this tunnel. Darn. And it's a bummer, but, you know, we got to let that one sink in. Or maybe it's remorse. Maybe we yelled at a child, or we drank too much, or we were flaky in our own personal wellness regime. We just, you know, we slipped. We had that cookie, and we're paying the price for it. And we really need to let it sink in that this doesn't work. Okay, those are unpleasant experiences, but they're positive in their result. All right, that said, the good news is that most of the experiences that are going to build up resources inside and help us feel better and lift our mood and heal our pain are pleasant experiences. And I just think that's good news. You know, it's kind of crazy, right? Lean into the positive and change your life for the better. Like, are you kidding me? But it really works, and it's neurologically sound.
You put that so well. Lean into the positive, because, oh my gosh, how much do we lean into the negative and fight with it and wrestle with it, but lean into the positive.
Right. And kind of, be like, I think of myself a little bit like one of these baleen whales that's like scooping a cubic mile a day of seawater, you know, extracting the plankton. I think in life, they're the ones and twos and threes on the 0 to 10 scale of good experiences, but they're all around us. It's like we walk through life. There are little pearls and other jewels strewn before us. And most of the time we just step over them. We don't even notice them. Or if we do, we go, ah, that's nice. And then a few seconds of a positive experience, we move on. But that's not long enough for that experience to transfer in the long-term emotional memory stores in the brain. I say, no, you see these pearls and other jewels strewn before you, bring a vacuum cleaner. Mm-hmm. Suck them into yourself. You know, weave them into the fabric of your brain and yourself.
Is this why gratitude journals, I mean, I know that's just a simple kind of practice, but some people do that, and maybe not every
gratitude
day.
Gratitude journals are a really good example of doing things that create a positive experience. But here's the problem, and I say this about myself. Most positive experiences are wasted, at least as far as the brain's concerned, because they flow through the brain like water through a sieve. Mm-hmm. And so I see people, including myself, doing things like a gratitude journal where they'll have the concept of something they're grateful for, but it won't become an embodied, felt, emotional experience. Mm-hmm. And then second, even if they are having a moment of gratitude, they're not staying with it long enough, a dozen or two dozen seconds in a row, for it to transfer to memory storage, emotional storage, so it becomes part of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's beneath, they're staying with it below a critical mass or below a threshold. And if you're below that threshold, you know, it's almost as if it didn't happen at all as far as the brain is concerned.
So you want to really feel these things. You want to really feel them, and you want to stick with the feeling, fill your body with that, and hold it there in your attention. And
right.
It sounds like you can make some pretty big changes. I love the thing of leaning into the positive. I really love that phrase.
That's right.
In your book, you talked, you had a chapter about slowing down, and that was interesting because things are speeding up so much. I know I've really cut back where I rarely even watch the news anymore, and slowing down. So what are some of the effects you've seen of chronic speediness, for lack of a better word, and what tips do you offer people?
Yeah. Well, first of all, just notice how we're talking right now.
Fast.
For example, it really helps to bring it into the present. And the thing is, there's a place for a burst. You know, there's a place for sprints, right? Mm-hmm. We evolved. It's really important to appreciate the ways in which who we are has been shaped by 3.5 billion years of evolution of life on the planet, 600 million years of evolution of the nervous system, 200 million years as mammals, you know, 40 million years as primates, 2.5 million years as tool manufacturing hominids, and then, you know, early and now modern humans. I mean, it's been a long, strange trip, and here we are today. Down that long run, we evolved to be able to do sprints, to get away from a charging tiger or to go chase down some food. Right. But we did not evolve to make sprinting into a marathon. You can't do
it.
But that's what modern life is. And we get revved up. And then since everybody else is revved up around us, it becomes the new normal. Plus, in the workplace setting, particularly over the last 30, 40 years of, you know, policies and economic changes in terms of the way corporations have worked and downsizing and, you know, various, you know, policies of different kinds, people are really jacked up. So if you look around you and everybody else is working at 100 miles an hour, you got to work at 100 miles an hour too just to keep your job. So things like this are not good for either well-being in the moment or for long-term mental or physical health. And the main reason for that is they jack up the stress machinery in the body, which evolved to handle sprints. Okay, there's a place for sprinting. Mm-hmm. But to run that machinery with the stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline and the activation of what's called the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight stress response part of the nervous system, to run that kind of in a chronic mild to moderate level of activation is really bad. It's bad for the immune system. It's bad for the gastrointestinal system. It's bad for the hormonal system. It's bad for the cardiovascular system. It's bad for the musculoskeletal system. And it's bad for the nervous system. And the effects accumulate over time. So for me, a little bit, honestly, you know, it's, I sometimes think, as a guy who's been doing psychology and human potential and contemplative practice for about 30 years now, sometimes these things get seen as sort of new age or flaky or wussy or, dare I say it, feminine or something like that, as if there's anything wrong with being feminine, right?
Right.
But actually, it's tough as nails to stand up for yourself mm-hmm. against the stream and say, no, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do what I need to do to keep this job. I'm going to, you know, live the life I need to live in New York or L.A. or San Francisco where I live and so forth. But when I can, rising in the elevator or using the bathroom or that 10, 15 seconds between phone calls or after I complete an email, I'm just going to pause. I'm going to stop for a moment, settle down, come back into myself, and get the needle of my personal stress meter out of the orange zone, at least back to yellow, if not chartreuse, you know, green with a little yellow, or even green itself. I'm going to do that. And if we do that, honestly, half a dozen times a day, we just kind of slow down a little. Maybe we move a little more slowly when we reach for the telephone or we reach for the cup or and we walk to a meeting rather than racing to a meeting. Those little things, half a dozen times a day, completely change your quality of life. For one thing, in addition to the content, the specific impact of changes like that, implicit in them are two important things. One, you're kind of taking control of your life. You're a hammer instead of a nail at a time when so many of us feel pushed around by events and our reactions to them. And second, you're treating yourself like you matter, which is also especially important if you have any history of feeling like you haven't mattered enough to others.
I think one of the challenges for me, because I was always a person that felt very connected to accomplishment, and that's yeah. always been a big part of my identity is accomplishment. So for me, it was very hard to realize, you know what, my path's going to make me slow way, way, way down. And while everybody else is going 100 miles an hour, I might be going 10. And yeah. I'm going to have to be okay with that and do what I can and see life from a different angle. And now, it's not that I'm glad that I'm, you know, the turtle, but I have to say there's things that you notice. And in the interviews we do, it was so funny, he said, like, this is a sprint whenever we do an interview. You know, when you do a radio spot, when you do something, it is a sprint. It's a short amount of time to get a lot of information in, but the whole day is not like that. Oh, my gosh, if the whole day was like that, that would not work for me.
Yes.
And I think it's really important. All of you have different schedules, different lifestyles. You have different types of jobs, so maybe it's just about not comparing yourself to others. And if you see somebody who's going at a speed that doesn't feel right to you or doesn't work for you, don't compare yourself. Focus on your own path. I think that's mm-hmm. a really big key. key. Don't, you know, and we get kind of sucked into this thing, sometimes unconsciously without realizing it, thinking, well, everybody else is doing this. And it's not true that everybody else is doing anything, ever, really.
So. Yeah, I think for me, a lot of it shows up as, it's kind of like, tune into yourself. In other words, if in the moment, if people actually just take a few seconds, even right now in this phone, in this interview, to feel into themselves, what's there? And sometimes what's there is basic well-being. It doesn't mean we're having a million-dollar moment, but there's a basic sense of well-being and a basic sense of ease and feeling loved and loving. But much of the time, people feel tense, uneasy, kind of frazzled, irritated. Well, guess what? When we feel that way, these ancient mechanisms that helped our ancestors survive in very dangerous conditions, these ancient mechanisms are being activated. The same mechanisms that got us away from charging lions back in the Serengeti in Africa are active when we feel frazzled or pressed or pressured or irritated or a little upset or upset or blue based on some kind of rejection. So when we tune into ourselves, immediately the body tells you what to do. It typically is telling you, exhale, look away, look out the window, drink a glass of water, use the bathroom, disengage for a moment here. And that wisdom, for me, is our guide 1 minute at a time. You know, like they say, the Tibetans say, you know, take care of the minutes. If you just take care of the, it's really actually the next few seconds. If you just take care of the next few seconds with a little ease, sit a little differently in the chair, you know, relax your arms a bit, pull away from the keyboard, take a moment to really gather yourself, your performance will go up at work. It's interesting. The Harvard Business School has a magazine, Harvard Business Review, I think it's called. And the issue, like two or three issues ago, had a smiley face on the cover about the ways in which major corporations are appreciating that well-being of the kind that you and I are talking about here and that you teach and that people on your show talk about. The kind of basic well-being that we're talking about translates immediately into bottom-line profits. People think, yes, it's true that sprinting will help you gain something in the short term. Mm-hmm. But in the long term, sprinting is much less efficient. It's much less productive. It's much less creative. You know, it's much you're not able to sustain over the long haul.
Right.
That's why tuning into your body, responding to its wisdom, being guided by practices like in my book, Just One Thing, or things like that, you know, that is a way to both feel better and function better. And, of course, given the mind-body connection, live healthier and live longer.
So fascinating. Can you feel how we've slowed down now that we're talking about it more? And that feels better, right?
Yeah, completely. Absolutely completely. And and the point, too, is so easy. You know, it's just in this moment. There's a place for doing big things, you know, for making a major change in your career or getting really into a relationship or really out of a relationship or dealing with a serious health problem. Okay. But most of the where we have leverage in life, most of where we have impact is on the next few seconds. It's on, do we relax our breathing? Do we slow down just a little bit? Do I look you in the eyes when I'm talking with you? Or is my attention skittering away for the remote control, you know, or the next emails I've got to compose? Am I chewing a little more slowly? Am I enjoying this swallow? Am I enjoying this breath? I mean, down to this level, that's how we construct our life, right?
Yeah.
And we can do the things I'm describing while absolutely being in the mainstream. I have a business consulting background before I became a therapist. I mean, my wife and I have two young adult kids. I've been married over 30 years. I have a mortgage. You know, I live in the real world. You can live in the real world while still, you know, grounding yourself and feeding yourself with these little practices I talk about in Just One Thing or things related to that. You can do that in such a way that also lets you, A, really be in life, and B, be a lot more effective in life too.
And I love hearing you say all this because I know this, I practice it, I preach it, and then I forget it, or I have parts of the days where I'm not doing it. But just to call myself back to it, and it does increase productivity. It does. Mm-hmm. And it's also not always about quantity. It's about quality in your life, you know? So we got to get off this idea that it's about quantity, because it's really not. And if you focus on these little things in just the next few moments, and if you're in any situation that feels overwhelming to you, even simply breathing deeply, relaxing the body can help you make the shift. And I love that you're talking about that.
It's about coming into a kind of intimacy with yourself, where you're intimate with yourself and caring toward yourself in a very kind of felt way. I mean, there's a lot of positive psychology out there. You know, there's a lot of hopeful stuff that to me sometimes is kind of sentimental. It doesn't come down to the body. It doesn't come down to our feelings. It doesn't come down to a fundamental strength of heart for ourselves as the basis for being for others. And that's what's really needed.
This is wonderful. I'm so excited you've been on today. Your book again, Just One Thing, Developing a Buddha Brain, One Simple Practice at a Time. And your website, rickhanson.net. Can people order the book there as well?
Yeah, and they can get it at their local bookseller or Barnes & Noble or Amazon. I think it's about $12 on Amazon. It's a very... I actually had a real compliment from an interview. The guy said, you know, this is a bathroom book. And I went, fine, because we're so busy. Oh, yeah, each of the practices is about 2 to 3 pages long.
Yeah.
It's very short and sweet. And I put in 52 because if people want, they can kind of focus on one a week or they can bounce around. And they're very solid. They're very grounded in brain science. But the writing is utterly accessible. It's very down-to-earth and plain and direct and right from my heart.
Thank you, Rick.
Oh, Joe, totally a pleasure.
You've been listening to Zentertainment Talk Radio on the web at www.zentertainment.org. I'm Joe Davidson, and that was Rick Hansen. Again, you can find out more about his new book, Just One Thing, at rickhansen.net. Catch y'all next time. Peace.